Senator Cotton, I appreciate you coming today. My first comment before my question.
I'm sorry, what was your name, sir?
My name is Dylan.
Dylan,
yes.
All right.
I'm from Bentonville.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I appreciate you coming today. My first comment has to do with the going to clean energy that you're referring to. I think we need to ask Tom Pruitt what he thinks about his state and the fracking that he's doing to get the gas out of his state. And the effects that it's happening, or the effects that are happening, are the earthquakes that are increasing every day. So, and then the polluting of the water as well. So that's not my question. My question is referring to Chris that asked the question down here. It's a great question because we have a huge deficit and it's increasing all the time. Excuse me. So my question is, if we're so concerned about the deficit, why are we building a wall that costs $20 billion? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Why are we building a wall that costs so much? And it prevents so many families from coming here and starting a life that can pay taxes and make us great again by helping us decrease these deficits, let them be a citizen of this country and pay without fear that their country is going to send them away. These are citizens that contribute every day to the economy of the U.S. and they're living in fear, and we'll drive them away, and how are we going to pay for the deficit? The next point is referring to the Dreamers. They deserve their families to be here and not be separated and living in fear that their families... These are human beings that come here and work extremely hard every day to go to school, to get an education, and try to work for a job, some that they can't even apply for because they can't get citizenship, nursing degrees, anything to go past a two-year college requires sometimes for them to be citizens, and we don't have an established path for them, so they're working for absolutely nothing, and we send them away without allowing them to pay the taxes. So my question to you, Senator, what are you going to do to fight the hypocrisy that we're seeing every day with everyone saying that they're so concerned about the deficit, but we don't take actual resolute action to make sure that we're paying it down? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dylan. So I'll say not every dollar of government spending is an equal dollar. You might not surprise you to know you don't get a full dollar's worth of value for a lot of money spent in Washington. The most important thing is security and safety. That's why. That's why I think our government has to budget first for our military, our law enforcement, our civil court system. It's hard. I didn't say it's the only thing. I said it's the most fundamental and important thing that we get right. It's hard. And in the same way that our military and that law enforcement is a critical part of our security and safety, securing our borders is a critical part of our security and safety.
Senator!
Okay. This gentleman here has been waiting patiently.
Thank you.
He's been waiting patiently, so let's listen to him.
So my name is Clint Schneckloth, and I'm the pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Thank you, Clint.
And these are my people. And one of the things that I've been involved in for a number of years as a pastor is direct refugee resettlement.
I'm sorry, what refugee?
Refugee resettlement.
I thought there was something in front of refugee.
Direct.
Direct refugee.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I've been involved nationally with that, and now also here in Arkansas. It's a native Arkansas nonprofit. And when we had the executive order here this last month, there were a couple of things here. You know, of course, there was all the impacts on the immigrant community, but then the big impact on refugee resettlement directly was the pause on refugee resettlement proposed for 120 days and then reversed. And then the concrete numbers are downsized after those proposed 120 days from 110,000 to 50,000. And what a lot of people aren't aware of, and maybe don't think through, is, you know, you imagine if you open a restaurant in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and then I tell you that you can't do business for 120 days with your restaurant, you know exactly what's going to happen with your restaurant, right? I mean, that's just not a sustainable business model. So what all of the refugee resettlements all around the country are dealing with right now is the real potential for basically completely undermining something that's a really important, long-standing American institution, which is that we welcome refugees. Now, you're in my shared commitment is that you've actually sought to increase refugee resettlement to the United States on some levels, although it's a focused, yours was more of a focused ask.
I can explain, yeah.
The targeted 10,000 that we wanted to do from Syria. We do refugee resettlement from all over the world. So the most recent arrivals are coming from Democratic Republic of Congo and Iraq and places like that. What we need from you, and I'm wondering if you can maybe outline a few of these ways that you might do this, is how can you ensure that we maintain our refugee resettlement at the quality and high levels that we've committed to, especially over the past couple of decades, so that we keep up a program that really benefits all of the United States?
All right. Thank you very much, Clint, for the question. And thank you most of all for the ministry you do for resettling refugee and that your church does. It's incredibly commendable. So you're right. We've almost always welcomed refugees to our shores. At times when we haven't, it hasn't been a time when we covered ourselves in glory as a country. As you've said, I've supported the refugee program to address some problems it had, in particular for religious minorities and Christians, or religious minorities in Syria, like Yazidis. I think, as I said, I'd explain it. So what Clint mentioned, I had legislation that would create 10,000 new visas. It wouldn't take visas from any current refugee pipeline members, but new visas that would cover religious minorities, be they Yazidis or Jews or Christians from Syria. There's a reason for that. There's a practical reason for that. In our refugee, as Clint probably knows, in our refugee process, we largely rely on the UN High Commissioner for Refugees to do the vetting. And that's largely fine. They do great work. However, given the volume of refugees that we've seen from Syria in particular, in the camps in Jordan and Turkey, that means that it's almost all Muslim Syrians. So
we love Muslims. We love Muslims, yeah.
Say again.
Yeah.
And the reason that is a lot of those, a lot of those minorities in Syria, like Yazidis, like Christians, like Jews, don't feel comfortable going into those camps. So they are left out of the process from the very beginning. By creating a separate pathway of 10,000, it makes sure that they're going to come in. This is modeled on exactly what our country did for Jews in the Soviet Union and what we've done for Jews and Christians from Iran, creating people that are specifically protected because they've been subject of persecution without impacting the refugee system at all. But the more fundamental point I want to relay about getting to the root of the problem is a story of when I was sitting I was sitting with my wife in a refugee camp about 8 miles from the Syrian border in Jordan. We had, you know, maybe 20 or 30 young Syrians. A lot of them were like us. They had young children living in the worst kind of privation you can imagine. A baby had a medicine bottle with a couple rocks in it for both a rattle and a chew toy. And a young Syrian dad said to us, 20 million Syrians don't want to leave Syria and go to Europe and the United States. They want one Syrian to leave. We want to go back to our homes and our farms. So ultimately, the answer to a refugee crisis like we face today, the answer to a refugee crisis we face today is not immigration policy, it's foreign policy. It's getting our foreign policy right so we don't create refugees in the first place. And we've gotten it wrong for a long time.
Yeah. And where we share, and so I'm glad to hear that, you know, where we share is our aim is to help provide a safe context for the people in the world who are the most vulnerable. And so you're articulating that there's this community in Syria that's very, very vulnerable.
And like
true.
You said, in Congo and in other places as well, the best thing we can do for those people is try to bring more order and stability to their own countries, to their own regions, so they can live their lives there.
The only exception to that I would make is there will always be enough global instability that there's going to be a small percentage that will always require third country resettlement. And the United States is huge, you know, 300 some million people. We can welcome hundreds of thousands.
Well, I think we agree in principle. We may have some disagreement about the numbers, but we agree in principle.
Thank you.
Thank you, Clint. I know we haven't had one from up here in a while, so why don't we go up here?
Thank you, Senator.
Are you next in line there?
We're together. This is Samson.
Okay, hold on. Just 1 second, please. So it's 6:20. We said we go to 6:30. I'm going to go. I'll go for another half hour if that's good for y'all. Is that good? Okay. So we'll go for another half hour to 7. If you got to leave, please get up and leave quietly, and we'll keep going. But let's go for another half hour if that's okay with everyone. All right.
Senator, my name is Marsha Barnes from North Little Rock. Samson and I are a duo. I have a quick question, and he had a follow-up question on the Syrian refugee situation.
Okay.
My question is, do you agree with Mr. Trump that the press, in which he includes NBC, CNN, The New York Times, The Washington Post, MSNBC, is the enemy of the American people, yes or no?
No. So Marsha, the answer to your question is no. I would say this more broadly. I know we just had a very hotly contested campaign. It was very divisive. No American should look at another American as our enemy. We may be opponents, we may have disagreements, but at the end of the day, we're Americans. And we're fellow citizens in the same great country. So Samson, you want...
Yes, sir.
Follow up, Samson, on refugees.
Yes, sir. We have kids here today who are reading in their textbooks that many kids just like them about 70, 80 years ago We're being torn apart from their homes. We're being classified by their religion, classified by what they come from. There are kids here today that are in the same schools as kids with parents who are American, but they have parents who are not born in this country. Now, whose parents love America more? Neither. They both love it. Now, there are worried kids that I grew up with, that I played soccer with, worried kids that I learned those textbooks with. I'm afraid that what we are doing to our kids, to my generation, to my kids' generation, I'm a college student. I will be faced with these problems in about 10, 15, 20 years, while a lot of your constituents are, you know, really die off. They don't have to shoot these guns in their wars. They don't have to deal with climate change. Your kids will. Those kids will. Now, I want to ask you something. I want to ask you something because I think you're trying to do a good job here. I think you're trying to give you and your staff members a good name. But the truth is, you do not understand what you and your staff members have different from these kids here today. Amen. Okay? I want to ask you. If you call yourself a Christian man, if you call yourself an Arkansan citizen, an American citizen that stands for the Constitution, that represents kids like me, like them, in the state, in the city of Washington, D.C., with the world watching us, are you making the right decisions for these kids that are reading those textbooks while you are supporting the policies of a man who wants to grab women by the pussy? Answer honestly, the world is watching.
So,
answer the question.
So, Samson, it would seem that you've uncovered that we have a lot of people here who are not supportive of Donald Trump. We just had an election 3 months ago when 61% of Arkansans did support him.
Answer the question.
But ultimately, it's... Ultimately, it's not about Donald Trump. It's about us as Arkansans.
It's about us.
I've always believed, whether it's a president or whether it's another senator or another congressman, what Abraham Lincoln said: I will stand with any man when he is right, for as long as he is right. When he goes wrong,
grab women by the pussies.
So what I do in Washington is not ask who proposed an idea, but whether the idea is good for Arkansas. That's what I do in Washington, Senator. Ma'am, we got it. This man has been waiting for a long time.
Thank you, sir. My name is Marjay Hignight, and
I'm sorry, what was it, ma'am?
Marjay.
Marja. And you apparently work at Springdale High School?
Yes, I work at Springdale High School. Go Dogs. I see you. First, shout out to my dreamers, because they're my heart. And my question deals with education. In your Facebook post supporting Betsy DeVos, you stated... Okay. In your statement on Facebook supporting Betsy DeVos, you stated she's rightly skeptical of any attempt by Washington to impose social engineering fads on Arkansas's parents and teachers. This freaks me out. This is not a curriculum statement. What social engineering means to me is integration during the Civil Rights Movement, inclusion of our students with IEPs and 504s who were not allowed in the classroom when I was growing up. I remember it. They were not there. Do you remember them? They were not there. Here is my question. What does this statement mean to you? Do you support equity and opportunity? And will you promise to not cut the funding of our public schools in Springdale, Arkansas?
So, Marcia, it seems like you've uncovered that Betsy DeVos may not be the most popular Secretary of Education here. I would say this though. If you feel.
Let him answer.
If you feel that strongly about the Secretary of Education, maybe the Department of Education has too much power. So, Marcia, I suspect, Marcia, that you did not like a lot of No Child Left Behind Act, did you?
There were some issues with No Child Left Behind. I do think we test too much, but Arkansas didn't integrate without the federal government. I mean, we didn't bring in kids with disabilities without the federal government. So that worries.
Although that was done not by the Department of Education, but by the 101st Airborne. So the reason I bring up No Child Left Behind, I know we got a lot of teachers here. My mother was a teacher and a principal. So I've heard for a long time about all of the problems that law has created for local school districts. That's why a little over a year ago, I supported the Every Student Succeeds Act, which said no national curriculums, which said the Department of Education can't mandate test anymore, that's gonna be done at the local level, and which gave power back to our state government in Little Rock and our local school boards. And I would not have voted for Betsy DeVos, I would not have voted for her if I had not talked to her and known that she supported those goals. Because I'll say this. So, look, I know there's a lot of different in a place like Washington County and Benton County, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of money. You can have private schools and religious schools. Like where I grew up in Yale County, we don't have options like that. It's either the public school or homeschooling. And a lot of families can't afford the homeschool. So I am committed to making our public schools the very best they can be all across Arkansas. Ma'am, you've been waiting patiently for a while.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, Senator Cotton. Thank you very much for being here. My name is Julia Sampson. I live in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Both of my parents served in the military. My childhood, my life was very different than most people. When your mom's Women's Army Corps and your dad's a drill sergeant, my life is just very, very different. But both of my parents were able to serve in the military and to serve a country that didn't really care for them that much. People that looked like me, my parents were able to fight for freedom and justice. Rather than freedom and justice for all, they fought for freedom and justice for y'all. I can't imagine how they did that. I can't imagine how they put their life on the lines. My dad was a combat veteran of Korea and Vietnam, Purple Hearts galore. But my parents were highly qualified, they were legitimate, they were competent, they were law-abiding people. I would expect no less of those qualities from the Commander-in-Chief. Is that presidents in the past have shared with us their tax returns. Remember those qualities, highly qualified, competent, and law-abiding. What we want to see in the tax returns, and it's already provisioned by law, what would you do to help bring that about in Congress to show this man's tax return? We need to know.
Well, Julia, first off, let me thank you for your family's history of service. Mm-hmm. You're 100% right that many people who served this country of color did not receive the respect and the honor they deserved at the time. Mm-hmm. We've gone some ways to redress that. Mm-hmm. But we have farther to go, so thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your assessment of Donald Trump, I understand, I respect. The way we determine who our commander-in-chief in this country is through elections. And we just had an election. And this was... This was a hotly contested issue during the election. And Donald Trump still won. And Donald Trump still files a financial disclosure statement every year, just the way every other federal elected official does.
I mean, the former president showed his birth certificate, my God. I mean.
Let him talk.
The president files a financial disclosure statement every year, just like any other federal elected official does. And we just had an election where that was a hotly contested issue. Let's go up here.
Good evening, Senator Cotton.
I'm sorry.
My name is Carla Martin. I'm a data analyst. I'm sorry.
What was your name?
Carla Martin.
Carla, okay.
I'm a data analyst. I live and work in Fayetteville. I vote every time the polls open. And I will say that I have never voted for you. But after the presidential election somewhere in the fall, I saw a quote in the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette where you said that you wanted to claw back some of the power from the presidency. And I saw that and thought, that's the first time I saw something in print that I agreed with you, and I have been looking for it. And I've been waiting and hoping. And I'm just, everything has looked like a rubber stamp.
Yeah.
And while 60% of Arkansas voters did vote for Trump, I don't believe that's going to be 60% of the people who vote in the next election. The political landscape has changed for all of us. There are many people here who have never been to a town hall. You've never needed a venue this large, but thank you for finding one. The current president is not very popular in this part of the world. And he is providing you with so many opportunities to claw back power with these executive orders. The tax returns. I really was hoping you were going to come through on Betsy DeVos, but that's past. What exactly are you going to claw back from Trump? Where is the rubber stamp going to stop? And where are you going to start work? Where are you going to earn my vote? Senator Cotton, I want to vote for you in the next election. I want to know what you're going to do for me to earn that vote. I was a Republican until 10 years ago, and the Republican Party made a huge shift, and, well, they got in, started messing with science class. But what are you going to do?
Well, thank you for your question. It's very important. The power that I'm talking about that we need to take back from the executive branch is your power. It's the power to make the laws that govern this country. And for too long, both parties, whether they're in Congress or in the White House, have given too much power away to unelected officials in Washington, D.C. That means that, and you talk about the next election, whether it's 2018 or whether it's 2020, you can't have an election that holds those unelected officials accountable. Just can't do it. So what I want to do, I want to take some of that power back to the Congress, not for me, but for all of you.
I'm sorry, your quote specifically was to claw power back from the presidency.
Yeah, so probably the most presidency. The most important thing is that Congress should have to vote on regulations that have a big impact on our country. So if a bureaucracy passes a regulation that's going to impact your lives, that's going to cost you money, it's going to cost Arkansas jobs.
That's not the question.
You said, what kind of power do I want to take back?
The quote specifically was clawing back power from the presidency. And we've got executive orders that... I'm not talking about unelected officials. Your quote specifically was clawing back power from the presidency.
Well, the president is in charge of the entire executive branch. So it's the president's regulations. So,
yes, but he has been granted additional powers since the Patriot Act.
Do we want to go up here?
Go ahead. Get ready to tell me. Hello. Hi, Senator Cotton. I'm Diane Button from Little Rock, Arkansas. Thank you. My question is, I know you and your fellow Republicans are completely concerned about terrorism, Islamic terrorism, as you like to call it. But we have over 30,000 people a year killed here due to gun violence. Thank you, everybody. I would like to know when... Well, two questions. When you and your Republican colleagues are going to do something about sensible background checks and gun laws, and also, why in the hell did you guys vote to allow the mentally adjudicated people to be able to pass a background check? Why? Why? Why do you want guns in the hands of people adjudicated mentally ill? Sorry, it's a pet. I'm passionate.
So Diane's talking.
Please answer.
A vote last week that we repealed a regulation that infringed upon the rights of law-abiding citizens.
Oh, come on. Come on. We're not talking about that. Wait. No. We're talking about sensible background checks and gun laws. No civilian needs a 30-round magazine, a high-powered assault rifle. Nobody needs that, but the police and the military. We have had more people killed in 1 year due to gun violence in this country than ever by terrorism, ever. In this entire world that this is a problem because of our gun laws. What's next? Toddlers with guns?
Diane,
So what's your answer?
What is an assault weapon?
That. I know where you're trying to trap me. I know that.
You mentioned it.
But the original question was, when are we going to do something about background checks? And why did you vote for mentally adjudicated people to be allowed to pass a background check?
So we have background checks in place now.
They're not sufficient. How about Dylan Roof?
We have background checks in place now, and any firearms dealer has to undergo.
We have a vetting process for refugees. Can't we have it for people who want to buy a gun?
Regarding the regulation last week, I suspect that very few of you would want to deprive someone of their First Amendment rights based on the due process.
That would be your party.
Sir, right here.
Senator Cotton, I'm Jeff Rich from right here in Springdale, Arkansas. Before I ask the question, can I address the audience real quickly? The more we yell, the less we get out of him. And frankly, I want answers out of him. So let him answer, please. Okay? Senator Cotton.
So thank you. Jeff from Springdale.
Yes, Jeff from Springdale. We talked about Nancy DeVos. You posted on your Facebook page how great she was. You received 6,500 comments from Arkansans. 97% of them said that they urged you not to blindly follow this Republican Party line and to vote against her confirmation. You didn't. Then, here comes Scott Pruitt. I think you know what Arkansans feel about Scott Pruitt and about the devastation that's happening to our next door neighbor. You again ignored Arkansans, you followed the party line, and you voted to confirm this guy. You just said a few minutes ago that you believe that climate change is a real present threat and that we cause it. Scott Pruitt doesn't believe that. And if you've seen the news in the last 2 hours, his emails confirm that. Since you've taken office, 95.2% of your senatorial votes have been directly aligned with the Republican agenda. So, my question, from your record, it appears clear that you seem more interested in building your brand with Mitch McConnell and the Republican elites in Washington.
I'm sorry, Jeff, could you start over? I couldn't hear.
Hang on. From your record, It appears clear that you seem more interested in building your brand with Mitch McConnell and the other Washington Republican elites than you are in representing the interests of Arkansans. So my question is this. As our representative of the natural state, when you continue to ignore us as constituents, why would we possibly pay you any attention when this 6-year temp job is over?
So I have to say,
let him answer.
I have to say, Jeff, Senator McConnell would be surprised if he was here tonight to hear that you think that I just vote the way he wants me to all the time.
So I vote 95.2% of the time. I'll give you credit for 4.6.
Let me give you a couple examples. A little over a year ago, we had a highway bill that was once again funded with smoke and mirrors and once again not fair to Arkansas. He championed that bill. I voted no on it. About a year and a half ago, we had a vote on setting up a framework for debate about the Iran nuclear deal. It was 98-1. I was the one against it. So I am always going to do what I think is best for Arkansans. That doesn't matter if it's Mitch McConnell's.
Let him answer, please.
And as you've seen here tonight, we've got differences of opinion. We've got 2,000, I think about 2,000 people here tonight, which is a great turnout, and I appreciate all of you. But there's another 3 million Arkansans that write to my office and call my office and come see me and come to other town halls. So the best I can do, the best any elected official can do, the best we can do is listen to all of you, take into account all of the facts and evidence and all of your positions, and try to do what we think is best. If I get in a position where 2/3 of Arkansans agree with me, that's a great position to be in. That means that a million Arkansans still disagree. And the answer to that is elections. And if you don't like the positions I've taken, then you don't vote for me. That's the best I can do for you.
Fair answer, thank you.
Okay, so we'll do two more. How's that? Two more. This lady's been waiting.
I want to lift
two more.
Let her talk.
Thank you. My name is Marcia Arbosneed, and I am actually speaking on behalf of Captain Helen Perry, Army Reserve, who is also the Arkansas State Fellow for the Elizabeth Dole Foundation, and I believe she has been in contact with your office as well as Senator Bozeman and the Congressman. And she has apologizes that she cannot be here because, unfortunately, the state of Arkansas does not provide sufficient support to the caregivers of wounded veterans. Her husband, Sergeant Matthew Perry, is a wounded veteran and was retired from the Marine Corps last year after being wounded in Afghanistan. Her question is, what are you planning to do for wounded, ill, disabled, retired veterans in Arkansas in the future, and especially for their caregivers who get, in reality, almost no support?
Thank you. So, thank you very much for bringing the question, and pass our thanks along to Helen and Matthew for their service and for their sacrifice as well. I am committed to keeping all the promises that we made to our veterans. That means reforming our VA, because too often our VA has not served veterans, in particular wounded veterans from this generation who have particular kinds of wounds, you know, whether they're traumatic brain injury, injuries that we can't always see, or whether it's an amputation. Now here in Arkansas, we're pretty fortunate that our two big VA hospitals in Fayetteville and Little Rock haven't had some of the problems that other places have had, like in Phoenix. Now, I know they're not perfect. I bet some of you have had negative experiences, but by and large, we've had the reporting I get is positive experiences. But what I want to make sure, you're shaking your head, so you may know about a negative experience. I hear those as well. But by and large, I think we've got good people, working in Fayetteville and Little Rock and all the satellite clinics. I want to make sure that we empower them with the right kind of tools, the best practices from private health insurance and private health care and benefits processing claims, so they don't have some of the struggles that I've heard from so many veterans of my friends. As it goes for caregivers, we need to do a much better job of providing for caregivers.
Much better.
We need to.
Much better.
Some of you are probably aware, I mean, caregivers basically depend on private charity, and that's a shame. We ought to do a better job with our VA budget of giving flexibilities to the families who need it. We took a small step in that direction a couple years ago to encourage people to have the option of either the VA system or seeing a local provider. We can take more steps in giving them more flexibility of using those benefits for caregivers, because it might be better for a family to be able to provide for an air ticket or a hotel room or a long-term stay facility than just going to the VA. So that's what I would say
The most recent effort on behalf of the VA in order to allow veterans to go to facilities that were more than 30 miles away, et cetera, had horrible unintended consequences and needs to be fixed, because it was actually worse than what they had. And it provided nothing for the caregivers. Caregivers provide all of the care for their wounded veterans that are ill or disabled with no reimbursement and no assistance, essentially. That is what the Elizabeth Dole Foundation is trying to do on behalf of veterans, but they shouldn't have to depend on charity to do it.
I agree.
And it is important that they get the care that they need.
Thank you. I agree. And please thank the Perrys for us as well. Okay, one more question.
Are we gonna stop selling bombs to Saudi Arabia? Obama, Bush, Hillary sold bombs to Saudi Arabia. Are you gonna stop selling bombs to Saudi Arabia?
We're gonna go in the order.
It's a brutal dictatorship. Half your income taxes go to war and military. That's why our national debt's $20 trillion. We have to stop this profit over people thing. It's not Christian.
So we have a young woman up here. We'll do one more question up here. I've got some staff members who are going to be here. If you haven't been able to share your question or your comment, if you need help with the federal government, the VA, the Social Security, please see them. Give it, pass along. We'll get back to you. But this young lady up here.
Young man, say your name.
Did you go?
Toby. I'm Toby.
I'm sorry. What was your name, bud?
Toby.
Tony?
Toby.
Tony. Okay, Tony.
Well, so Donald Trump thinks a wall is more important than kids' games and stuff. But to kids, it's more important. And Donald Trump makes Mexicans not important to people who are in Arkansas who like Mexicans, like me, my grandma, and all my people. And PBS Kids just to make a wall. He shouldn't do that. He shouldn't.
So,
he shouldn't do all that stuff for just the wall. And
Tony, how old are you?
I am almost 8, but I'm 7.
Tony, thank you. Thank you. Toby, sorry.
Thank you.
Toby, T-O-B-Y, sorry. Toby, thank you for coming. I know a lot of 7-year-olds, this isn't their idea of fun, but I appreciate you being here. And I just want to say that whatever your background, whatever your heritage, whatever your race or ethnicity or religious belief, part of the fabric of America is that we are a melting pot and that we are all one people. And we want Mexico to be a healthy, strong partner. We want to help them to deal with the problems that they've got with drug cartels and crime and grow their economy.
He just wants to watch PBS.
We also...
Mexico!
We also have to protect our own citizens from that, and that's where the wall comes in.
It costs almost nothing! It costs almost nothing for PBS!
So you can... Toby, you can still have one and have the other. So... Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. I've got another appointment I've got to get to.
Thanks for coming on dinner time on a Wednesday.
Thank you once again for coming. If you're on my staff, raise your hand, please. Raise your hand. We got lots of people with clipboards. Please share your comment, share your concern. If you need help with a federal agent, they'll help you get back to you. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate your help. Thank you for making a good night.